Hello and good day. You are tuned into Warning Shots here on CKUW 95.9 FM. Warning Shots is CKUW's independent international news show. And of course, CKUW 95.9 FM is your listener-driven radio station on the FM dial in Winnipeg. I'm your host, Scott Price. Today is May the 3rd, 2013, and on today's show, you will hear an interview with Sarah Petz, who is raising money to fund a radio documentary about the escalating land conflicts in northern Uganda. And then later on in the show, you will hear an interview with Danielle DeLuca from Cultural Survival. She is the program manager of Cultural Survival. Cultural Survival is like sort of an NGO advocacy group that works a lot with indigenous peoples to try to protect indigenous peoples' lands, their culture, their rights, their languages around the world. So I'll be the interview with Danielle is about land grabs in Ethiopia, something I've been talking about last little bit on for a little while now. I talked to her this morning, phoned her up. She's right now based in Guatemala. As well, you'll also hear a update on some news that's happening about a mine that's a very controversial mine in Guatemala that we talked about a couple weeks ago. Of course, there's this mine done by Tahoe Resources, which is a Canadian mining company. And so there is some more things happening there. So you'll hear more of that in the news brief as well. When I talked to Danielle about the land grabs in Ethiopia at the end, I asked her a bit about what she knew what was happening in Guatemala around that, because there's some protests, some people have been killed, the stuff is starting to hit the fan in Guatemala around this issue. So you'll also get an update on that. So those are the three things that are happening today on the show. And of course, you'll have your international news in briefs as always. excuse me, I might periodically cough through the show. I've been battling a cold for a while. It's almost gone, but I have this lingering cough, this ghost cough that just decides to just strike me at very inopportune moments, and it's not very good. So pardon me, pardon myself in advance if I start coughing or something like that. But first, a couple of announcements like I always like to do at the start of the show. Now, as I said, CKUW 95.9 FM is your listener-driven radio station on the FM dial in Winnipeg. We take listener-driven very seriously. That means that not only are you supporting us right now, but we depend on your pledges every February during Fund Drive. Because of this whole aspect of listener-driven, I really encourage you to get a hold of me with questions, comments, concerns, ideas, all that kind of stuff. There's a couple ways you can do that. You can phone the on-air telephone here to get right into the on-air booth. That is 204-774-6877. Email me, warningshots.ckuw959@gmail.com. Or you can find me on Twitter, @warningshots. You can find me there as well. I also really suggest, excuse me, that you follow CKUW on Twitter as well. It is a great resource to kind of find out what's happening. See, there's that cough. See what's happening on CKUW, because there's a lot of always little things that are happening, ticket giveaways, those sorts of things. And if you follow CKUW on Twitter, you'll get all that kind of stuff, as well as special programming, what's happening. Maybe someone, a special guest or someone's coming in to host a show or something like that. So to learn about all that kind of stuff, that is where you want to go. All right, that's the announcements. Let's get down to some of the news happening around the world right now.
Thank you.
right, now here is some of the news happening around the world right now. Al Jazeera is reporting Guatemala has declared an emergency, state of emergency in four southeastern towns on Thursday, suspending citizens' constitutional rights in an area where deadly protests over a proposed silver mine has erupted in recent weeks. Guatemalan President Odo Perez announced the move in an effort to quell protests targeting the mine belonging to Canadian miner Tahoe Resources Incorporated. Two people have been killed in the demonstrations. The company's security guard shot and wounded six demonstrators on Saturday, said Guatemala's security minister. The next day, protesters who say the Escobal silver mine near the town of San Rafael La Flores will contaminate local water supplies kidnapped 23 police officers. One police officer and a demonstrator were killed in a shootout on Monday when police went to free the hostages. Police and military raided the four towns on Thursday, arresting 15 people suspected of kidnapping, weapons theft, and destruction of private property. Tao said in a statement it regretted the injuries to protesters caused by rubber bullets, but denied any responsibility for the deaths. The 30-day state of emergency will suspend citizens' rights to bear arms and assemble peacefully. It also gives authorities the power, without a warrant, to search residents suspected of crimes. And weekly news update on the Americas reports some 200 to 300 agents of Buenos Aires Metropolitan Police invaded the grounds of the Jose T. Borda Public Psychiatric Hospital in the Argentinian capital during the early morning of April the 26th to guard demolition workers as they bulldozed some of the hospital's buildings. When hospital workers, patients, and community members gathered later to protest the demolition, police agents used nightsticks and rubber bullets against the crowd. Protesters said some 50 people were injured, including at least 10 patients, seven nurses, three media workers, and a member of the city legislature. The authorities reported 36 people injured, 17 of them police agents, eight people were arrested. And the Mail and Guardian is reporting, as Brazil prepares for the 2014 World Cup and Confederation Cup in June, its Association of Prostitutes has been teaching sex workers English. 80,000 sex workers are counting on brisk business as authorities predict 40,000 tourists will be in town next month for a total of three matches from June the 15th to June the 30th. A whopping 140,000 are expected to follow for the 2014 World Cup. With that in mind, the Association of Prostitutes has been offering free English classes to its members at a local mall since March. The goal, says the association president, is to provide prostitutes with communication skills to keep clients who don't speak Portuguese happy, both during the upcoming sports extravaganza and beyond. So far, 300 prostitutes have signed up for the program. A shortage of hotel rooms has also been reported in Rio de Janeiro, and the government is investing millions of dollars to convert raunchy motels to accommodate the legions of tourists expected for these events. And that is just some of the news happening around the world right now. Do stay tuned. In a moment, we will hear from young Canadian journalist Sarah Petz on her fundraising effort to fund a radio doc on the land conflicts in Uganda. So do stay tuned. This is Warning Shots, CKUW's independent international news show. Keep it locked here right on 95.9 FM. We will be back in a moment. And we are back. This is Warning Shots here on CKUW 95.9 FM. Warning Shots is CKUW's independent international news show. I am your host, Scott Price. And today is May the 3rd. It is 1:14. Now, now turning to Uganda. And our first interview, Sarah Petz is currently a master's of journalism student at Carleton University in Ottawa. Before doing that, she worked at the Manitoban, which is the University of Manitoba publication. She has also been a freelance writer for the Winnipeg Free Press since October 2011, where she also completed a month-long internship this past December. This spring, excuse me, she will be completing an internship with the National Post. She has also been working as the managing news editor of the Gemini News Service, which acts as a wire service for African news produced by journalists in the developing world. Sarah has recently started a fundraising campaign to fund a trip to Uganda to make a radio documentary on land conflicts in northern Uganda and the rebuilding of Uganda after civil war. So without further ado, here is Sarah Petz, a young journalist of local Winnipeg stock, now talking about this project that she wants to put together. So without further ado, here is Sarah Petz. Talk about the project, how it came about, and sort of why you're interested in it.
Okay, well, basically the project is looking into ongoing land conflicts in northern Uganda. And when I say land conflicts, I mean disputes over access to land for farming. What sort of piqued my interest in the idea was I've always been interested in potentially being in international reporting and kind of had pipe dreams of being a foreign correspondent. And I went to a talk back in, I think it was October or November, with Farm Radio, which is an organization that promotes development through radio programs in developing countries. Well, they have some projects in Africa, but they're kind of spread out all over the world. And I went to a talk with actually the man that I'm going to be working with when I go to Uganda, who was talking about farming after the decades-long civil conflict and kind of how people are trying to relearn to farm and coming back to farming after being in internally displaced persons camps for a number of years. And I just thought that would be interesting to explore for an MRP. And then one of the reasons why I applied to Carleton was to take part in this African internship program. And then I remember going to my professor that runs the program and saying, you know, I really want to do this, but I don't know how, like, I'm going to afford to do it. And you know, like, I'm not going to be working all summer because I'm also working at the National Post, where I'm not, where I'm doing it basically on a volunteer basis. So, and he suggested that I maybe do my MRP there, and then that would maybe be a way to raise funds associated with that that project, which would in turn kind of help me get to Africa. So that's kind of a long-winded answer as to like why, how it kind of all got started. But
I guess just very quickly, for the listeners who maybe aren't that familiar, maybe just talk a bit about the situation in Uganda, like where it came from. So this is basically that people have been recovering from the civil war for a long time, and now it's they come back and then they find other people have now been occupying their land, and there's these basically these fights that break out, or this trouble that breaks out over that, right?
Yeah, I mean the conflict, the civil war essentially ended almost 7 years ago now, but where these land conflicts escalated from is people, you know, like living in these IDP camps for years and then coming back only to discover that their land is now occupied by strangers. And it's a pretty complicated issue, so that's not the reason why this is happening, but that is kind of the crux of why these land conflicts are happening. But in some cases, what happens is people that are more, you know, socially or financially connected force people that don't have those same connections off their land because poorer households can't afford the legal resources to fight for their land rights. So that's something that's an escalating issue as well.
Now in talking about all of this and this issue. So then what you're planning on doing, a radio documentary. So talk about the project and what you kind of want to look at and try to get at with this project.
Whatever city in northern Uganda, we'll also be working at a community radio station there just to learn more about community radio in Africa and its impact I'm interested in radio, so it's also a way to get more radio experience. What I want to do, or what I ideally would like to do, is focus on a district about an hour away called Amaru. I hope I got that right. But yeah, it's what I'd like to focus on is a district about an hour away from Gulu called Amaru. In the process of doing my preliminary research, this district just keeps coming up, and a lot of people. Some officials have complained that these land conflicts are really hindering people's ability to reintegrate into their communities and just hindering, it's just become like a huge threat to resettlement and peace in the region, particularly in this district. And since I'm going to be I'm going to be relatively close there, that's kind of why I want to focus on it.
Now, I'll talk a bit about the fundraising campaign that you're doing for this and sort of where people can do that. So you started an Indiegogo campaign, right, to fund this trip and this project.
Yeah, so what Indiegogo does is it's basically an online crowdsourcing platform where, you know, you pitch your idea and tell people a little bit about what you want to do with the project. Give people some incentives. Like I think one incentive, what one incentive is like, if you give like, you know, $200, you can get all the photos that I take, all photos that I take when I'm in Africa, and then also all the photos that are in the slideshow that he took. So, essentially, what happened is I wasn't successful in some of the grant applications that I applied for and was kind of relying on, and then. I knew of a couple other people that done digital campaigns through their journalism projects, and I just thought, well, what the hell? Like, I mean, what the hell? I might as well give it a shot. Like, I just didn't like I was stubborn, and I really didn't want to give up on my master's research project just because I'd put so much investment into it, and I feel like there was this sort of this misconception of Northern Uganda as this war-torn, war-ravaged region when there's really little, there's very little understanding of some of the complications that have arisen after the conflict and some of the challenges that people are facing when trying to rebuild after the conflict. Like all the attention is on, all the attention is on, you know, COIN 2012 and you know, Joseph Kony and the hunt of Joseph Kony, but like there hasn't been a lot of attention on you know, what these people's lives are like, you know, after living through decades of civil war. So I feel really passionately about, you know, telling that story. So I thought, you know, why not start an Indiegogo campaign and you know, both raise attention about the project and hopefully, you know, generate some financial support for it too.
Yeah, no, that's I think it's a laudable, great goal, and it's a great project to do, and especially I like your point about how the Kony 2012 thing, whatever that was, you know, got all the attention, but there's so much context that's missing out of that. So, I wish you luck in your campaign, and I'll give the information for the listeners if they want to give. And thank you, Sarah, for talking about this.
Thanks so much.
And that was Sarah Petz on her Indiegogo campaign to raise support for her master's project in Northern Uganda, basically to do a radio doc on what's going on as far as land disputes and people rebuilding after the war in Uganda. So if you want to go, you go to Indiegogo.com. That's Indiegogo, Indiegogo.com. And if you look it up, it's under, the project's name is under Support My Master's Project in Northern Uganda. If you look that up, I think, let's see here. Yeah, that's the best way to find out about it. Yeah, Support My Master's Project in Northern Uganda. I'll be uploading this, and then you can find it also on ckwnews.ca as well when this episode is aired, and the information will be there as well. So if you look that up, it's really a great cause. There's still about 30 days left to raise $5,000. So, you know, even if it's just a dollar, whatever you guys, whatever you choose to give, I think that's awesome. And especially too, like I said, homegrown journalism, you know, she worked for the Free Press, worked for the Manitoban. I think, you know, we always, we talk about sort of the decline of media and all sorts of talks about that kind of stuff. But I think, you know, this is a worthy project. And this is, to me, the kind of reporting that is also basically a lot of what we try to highlight here on Warning Shots. So it's a laudable thing. So again, go to Indiegogo.com, look up Support My Master's Project in Northern Uganda. And you can find that there. But, you know, of course, the links and all that will also be on ckwnews.ca when the episode is, this episode is uploaded over the weekend. So you can also find it there. Right now, let's go to the other part of the show. Let's turn to, we now turn to Ethiopia. For over 400 years, indigenous Anwak families have lived along the wide rivers of Ethiopia's Gambala region, cultivating maize and sorghum in the rich soil. On higher ground, they practice shifting cultivation, and in the forests, they gather fruits, nuts, roots, and medicines. These diverse resources have spared them from hunger even in times of drought. But now, Ethiopian soldiers are moving nearly all of the area's indigenous people, 45,000 households, off their lands and farms and into quote-unquote villages, where they fear starvation. Nearly half of Gambala's land is leased or available for lease to investors who are creating vast plantations of agri-fuel and food crops. mostly for export. Bulldozers are even draining and filling the wetlands of Gambala National Park and destroying its forests. To explain this land, the land grabs here and what's happening, who funds it, and how it's affecting the population in southern Ethiopia, I interviewed Danielle DeLuca from Cultural Survival. She is the programs manager. Double check that. Yes, program manager of Cultural Survival. Cultural Survival is an NGO that works specifically with indigenous people around the world to defend their land, languages, and culture. So without further ado, here is my interview with Danielle about what is happening in Ethiopia with these land grabs.
We'll begin. So, Danielle, so in what region of Ethiopia is this displacement happening?
So the purchase of these vast areas of land and the displacement of villagers has been occurring across four regions of Ethiopia, but it's most largely condensed within an area called Gambela, that's in the southwest region. Nationally, over the past few years, an area that's about the size of the Netherlands has been sold off to foreign companies. And within the Gambela region specifically, 42% of the land has been sold to foreign investors. And that's led to people having been forcibly evicted from their lands to make way for these investments.
Right. Now, who is in this region, Gambela? Is that how you pronounce it?
Gambela.
So who is mainly affected by this? And so, sort of talk about these people and sort of what kind of life they lead.
Mm-hmm. Across the country, it's affected about 1.5 million people. In Gambela, the government's plans have been to move 45,000 families into villages by the end of 2013. And these families are mainly indigenous people. They're mostly Anuak, but also groups called Messenger, Nuer, Opo, and Komo peoples. The Anuak practice something that's called shifting cultivation, which means that they move from place to place to cultivate food. They usually will harvest an area for about 2 to 3 years and then leave it to fallow for another 7 to 10. And they cultivate maize, they gather fruit, nuts, roots, medicines. Then other groups like the Nuer are nomadic pastoralists, so that means that their livelihoods largely revolve around cattle, and they move around to let livestock graze. So there are people who are rarely staying in one place for very long. But these groups have been in the region for generations, and they've been following these patterns of movement for generations. The Anuak have been practicing shifting cultivation in this area for about 400 years. But since they don't have legal titles to the lands, and because they don't build permanent settlements, the government considers the land to be uninhabited.
Now, I'm talking about this apparently uninhabited, but then, of course, they're moving these people out in this villagization process. So explain what this process is and why it's being done and sort of who is supporting this and who's funding this.
Sure. So villagization is a term created by the government in Ethiopia, and it refers to a process of taking all these nomadic and semi-nomadic peoples and relocating them to government-approved areas, forming villages of about 10 or 15,000 people in each village. The government claims that this is a voluntary relocation, supposedly with the goal of being able to more easily provide these populations with basic services like clean water, food, education, health services. But the reality is really much different. These communities are not given compensation for their lands when they're forced to move. They weren't consulted about having to leave their lands, which is a violation of their rights as indigenous peoples. They're often forced from their lands by the military in really violent ways to force them to move. There have been documented cases of beatings, rape, killings, and general intimidation towards the people to get them to leave their lands. And the government, they officially deny that there's any link between evicting these people from their lands and the simultaneous selling off of these lands to foreign investors. But there's evidence that they are, in fact, related, these two things. And to speak a little about who's supporting it and who's funding this, the government is carrying out this villagization scheme through a program called the Protection of Basic Services. So it's a Ethiopian governmental program. which theoretically is supposed to go towards ensuring that, that these basic services are provided, like food and water and education. It's a region that's very poor. It's one of the hungriest areas of the world. So there's a lot of pressure from donor nations to improve the standard of living. So that's sort of their theoretical goal of this program, but they're actually using it to force people off their lands. And this program received funding from the World Bank, from the UK's Department for International Development. And there's actually a legal case right now from an Anuak farmer known as Mr. O, who's taking the UK to court for contributing to the forced eviction from his land. So that's sort of the government side of it. And the other side, there's the foreign investors who are buying the land, which is leading to the government evicting the people. And these investors are mainly big agro companies from India, Saudi Arabia, China. And they're looking to buy the land to grow food and biofuels like palm oil, but mainly for export to rich countries, so not really for sale locally, which is, you know, it's really ironic since there's extreme hunger in the region and they're growing food to be exported to places like Europe.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that is a weird contradiction, a sad contradiction, really. And so in these villages, though, explain what these villages are like. Like, I was reading that there's complaints of that, well, there's no infrastructure set up, they're not really adequate. So talk about that.
Yeah. So it turns out that the promises that have been made by the government to provide these services in the villages has yet to be followed through with. The Oakland Institute is an organization based in California that issued a report called Unheard Voices, and they've done a lot of research on the ground in Ethiopia to expose these villages as having no food, no access to water, poor soil for farming, and basically no access to education or health services. And the Human Rights Watch also did some research and published a report called Waiting Here for Guests, and that title comes from a quote from an Anuak man who was interviewed, and he said that the government brought the Anuak people here to die. They brought us no food. They gave away our land to the foreigners, so we can't even move back. And the conditions are so bad that many have tried to leave to return to their communities or have fled to refugee camps in Kenya and South Sudan. So, you know, the conditions are very, very poor. And in addition to bad living conditions, it's also forcing a change of lifestyle and culture on the indigenous people who, for generations and generations, have lived nomadically. And it's forcing them to stay in one place, which really robs their identity and their lifestyle.
Yeah. Now, I'm also curious to sort of to take a bit more of a broader view for a moment. It's also interesting, I think it's important to note within this, that this isn't something necessarily that's just happened in Ethiopia. This is a wider phenomenon that's been happening in Africa where there's these huge land grabs. So talk about that, and why is it that these African governments lease or sell the land? You know, I believe in the Ethiopia's case, it was like $1.99 per hectare. And I think they're leasing the land for like an exuberant amount of times, like over 50 years. So explain why the governments do this, and kind of explain that dynamic of and this also because it's a wider phenomenon across the African continent as well.
Yeah, land grabbing is a really big issue that's happening in across Africa and really in the entire developed world at this point. It's really hard to say why they sell it so cheaply. It's a good question. So yeah, as you mentioned, the rents are incredibly cheap. To give a little perspective, one of the main, the biggest investors in Gambela region is called Karaturi Global. It's an Indian company. And they've leased an area that, if I've done my math correctly, it's about five times the size of the city of Winnipeg. And they're paying $230 a week for 99 years. So, you know, it's really, really cheap prices. And so it's a good question, you know, why are they selling them this cheap? And the way that I've heard the government explain it is that they consider the lands that they're leasing to be sort of a barren wasteland that's uninhabited and uninhabitable. And then meanwhile, foreign investment is something that these governments have been trying to achieve for years. It's a strategy that the World Bank has really helped to promote, the idea that rich countries should invest in poor countries to sort of boost their economy, which sounds like a good idea at first glance, but it really means that, you know, it means that huge sums of money are coming into the government, but the reality is that a large part of these funds probably end up lining certain people's pockets. So certain individuals in the government, which in a lot of African companies are very corrupt, end up making a lot of money on these deals. So with the world's huge population growth, there's been this massive scramble to buy up all of the remaining agricultural land. And so Ethiopia has made about 1,000 large-scale land leases over the last 3 years.
Yeah. Now, and also in talking about this, I mean, not only this specific problem, but I mean, there's a whole host of problems with the Ethiopian government as far as being, well, I guess to put it nicely, anti-democratic. There also seems to be a lack of political will here on the side of holding the Ethiopian government to account on these very clear human rights abuses with these land grabs of things that very clearly are an issue on top of the silencing of dissent in their own country. But there's a severe lack of political will here to put the Ethiopian government to account. Yet, you know, we see other governments get lambasted regularly by Western nations. So talk about why there's this lack of political will, or why you think there's this lack of political will to hold the Ethiopian government to account.
Mm-hmm. It's a good question. The country of Ethiopia receives a lot of funding from foreign nations, and it's seen as an ally country to fight terrorism in the region. So I think, you know, the UK government, the US government, they want to keep Ethiopia as an ally because they consider them to be very very useful in the region as sort of a base for fighting terrorism in Africa. So that's one reason I think. And then in terms of the Ethiopian government not being held accountable to their own citizens, I think the people in that are being mistreated here are rural people. They're very poor, which often means that they lack a voice and representation at national and international levels. They don't really have access to media. They don't have that many groups that are speaking on their behalf. As indigenous people, they've been historically marginalized from mainstream society, so their interests aren't often taken into account. The government might think that they can basically do whatever they want and no one will notice or care because these are such marginalized people. And the World Bank has been informed about these violations. On our Cultural Survival website, we have links to emails that people can send to decision makers in the Ethiopian government and in donor nations to point out these human rights violations and a call on these groups to stop them. But the World Bank continues to deny evidence that their funding is linked to the civilization process, and they've said that they've sent groups in and haven't encountered any human rights violations. They say that all of the evictions that have gone on are all voluntary. Which is really
just
parroting what the government said.
Yeah. Now, in talking about this, I mean, we talked about the on the both sides of both the Ethiopian government and these investors have roles to play and levels of responsibility. So, I guess first, what would be a way of putting pressure on the Ethiopian government to stop this?
So, because, as I mentioned, Ethiopia receives more foreign aid than any other African country, they receive about $3 billion a year in aid from foreign nations. It mostly comes from the U.S., the U.K., and the European Union. I know Canada donates to Ethiopia as well, not as large sums as those other three groups that I mentioned. So one of the strategies that we advocate for is to pressure the donor nations who have been linked indirectly to funding this militarization to make sure that their funds are not being used to contribute to human rights violations, and to ask the donor nations to pressure Ethiopia to comply with human rights standards by means of threatening to withdraw their aid, because it is a significant amount of money that's coming in from these countries. But I think one of the other strategies is to focus not just on the government, but also these private companies who are engaging in the land grabbing. They should also be pressured to respect indigenous people's rights and their rights to their ancestral lands and the right of indigenous people to give consent before projects like this are carried out. So when governments are held accountable to nations that donate to them and to their citizens, companies at the end of the day are usually accountable to their shareholders or investors. So that often includes the wider public. And it's really the responsibility of every one of us to know where we're putting our money and make sure that we're not providing capital for these sorts of human rights violations to continue. It's an issue that comes up a lot. For example, the Canadian pension plan, which many Canadians are contributing to, heavily invests in mining companies that commit human rights violations like Goldcorp, Barrick Gold, Tahoe Resources, First Majestic Silver. These are all companies that are trampling on the rights of indigenous peoples in developing countries, and I've witnessed that personally in Guatemala. It's something that I think the larger population in Canada isn't as aware of. So in the same way that people are now choosing to buy organic or buy fair trade, we also need to encourage socially responsible investment in our banks and our retirement funds. Make sure that where we're investing our money is going to companies who are doing, promoting good in the world and not promoting human rights violations. So that's one strategy we've seen that works because as shareholders, we can pressure companies to do better. We have a voice in the way that business is conducted. And since the negative press has come out about this issue in Gambela, one of the largest investors, Karaturi, their stock has plummeted around 90%. It makes his project much less viable when there's not the investment to back it. So we've seen that it's a strategy that does work.
Well, thank you for coming on to talk about this land grabbing and all this stuff in Ethiopia.
And that was my interview with Danielle DeLuca of Cultural Survival. And as I also said at the top of the show there, in the news briefs, there's been some incidences of in Guatemala around this silver mine by Tahoe Resources. And we covered that a couple weeks ago. If you go on CKWnews.ca, you'll see the link there of the interview. It's called Mining License Approved in Wake of Violence in Guatemala. So it's kind of all about this earlier on, this silver mine in Guatemala by, it was given to Tahoe Resources, which is a Canadian mining company. And so there's been lots of controversy surrounding this and all that kind of stuff. And so, like I said, at the top of the show in the news briefs there, Al Jazeera is reporting that there is a state of emergency being brought in for some of the towns, suspending citizens' rights and all this kind of stuff. There's been some dust-ups between some, well, more than dust-ups, clashes between demonstrators and police. Two people were killed in a demonstration. I think one was a protester, one was a... Yeah, one police officer and a demonstrator were killed in a shootout on Monday after protesters kidnapped 23 police officers, according to this report from Al Jazeera. So this is also Danielle, because she's based out of Guatemala right now. I asked her what she knew about this kind of stuff and what's happening. So here's a bit of an update on this mine in Guatemala by Tahoe Resources and sort of this controversy around it. And again, sort of what the situation is, as best as she knows at this point. I mean, information at this point is sketchy at this point, but it's something I'll be continuing to follow. But here is Danielle about this controversial mine in Guatemala and this clashes between police and protesters.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Just a quick thing, and I just saw this morning. So apparently, because you're in Guatemala, I was just reading on Al Jazeera here that there's this incident with this. I've done some interviews on it. This Escobal silver mine in Guatemala with Tahoe Resources. And there's been some controversy over that. Now, apparently, I'm reading here from Al Jazeera that that they declared a state of emergency in four southeastern towns. Do you know about this happening?
Yeah, I've been following just a little bit. There was apparently an incident. I've read different reports that some of the workers at the mine were taken hostage, and that there was an altercation between the community and the mine workers, and a policeman was shot. It's really hard to say that the media in Guatemala. And sort of what gets out to the international press is very, very skewed towards big business. So it's really hard to get the perspective of the local population in these cases. It's the mine in question has been something that the indigenous peoples in that area in Santa Rosa and Jalapa have been protesting for years. They have been rejecting this mine project, but haven't been given the chance to be informed and to give their consent on the plan for the project. The Guatemalan government issued the license to Tahoe Resources without having conducted an environmental impact study or a social impact study. So the Guatemalan government is reacting in similar ways to Ethiopia and just sort of issuing these licenses for investment from foreign countries from foreign companies without consulting the local population, which obviously makes them angry, it makes them stand up for their rights, makes them want to resist this project because they don't see in any way that it might benefit them. And in fact, in the case in Guatemala, it's been seen that mines really destroy the local environment, and then the companies leave and the local community is left with this toxic waste that lasts for generations. So yeah. It's something that the local people are very, very active against. And just a few months ago, about, I think it was four local Xinka leaders, which is an indigenous group in Guatemala, were kidnapped, beaten, and one man was actually killed. He was the traditional authority of the Xinka people in the region. And the community suspects that they were kidnapped as a result of their outspoken protests against the mine. So it's an issue that's really caused a lot of social unrest here, and the government has reacted to this by issuing a state of military rule, basically martial law for 1 month in this area, where police are on the streets. They've brought tanks in, military with heavy machine guns lining the streets to sort of what the government keeps the peace. But the community experiences it very differently.
Yes, and that was Daniel DeLuca talking about some of the context and the recent incidents there in Guatemala surrounding that controversial mine, silver mine, in Guatemala, in southeastern Guatemala. And of course, that has to do with also Tahoe Resources and the Guatemalan government, for that matter. So that whole controversy between that the company, the government, and then these indigenous people who oppose the mine. Again, if you want more information on that, go to cqwnews.ca. You'll see a mining license approved amid violence in Guatemala, and you'll see the interview there I did with Amanda Kistler, who follows a lot of things on international law and the environment. Quick break. We're gonna hear messages and then a song, and then we'll close out the show. Of course, earlier on with the music, earlier on in the show, you heard a track actually from Bad Religion, a new record called True North. I was looking through the racks, the stacks here of CDs, and I thought, oh gee, Bad Religion. Takes me back to my junior high days. So I put on a couple tracks from here. I like a little bit of punk rock, a little bit of, fast, kind of aggressive music to get you going for your Friday. So the first tune you heard earlier in the show was called True North. This is a song called Land of Endless Greed. You're tuned into Warning Shots here on CKW 95.9 FM. Keep it locked here. This is Bad Religion. I'll be back in a moment. So first announcements and then Bad Religion. Be back in a moment.
Time for a CETA myth-busting fact from the Council of Canadians.
Harper's myth: CETA would not prevent Canada's municipal governments from sourcing goods and services locally.
CETA fact: the procurement rules in CETA will prohibit any covered government or public agency from preferring one bidding firm over another based on the amount of Canadian or local content in the goods or services being offered.
Call your MLA. Go to Canadians.org for more information.
So simple.
Yes, and we are back. You are tuned into Warning Shots here on CKUW 95.9 FM. Warning Shots is CKUW's independent international news show. I'm your host, Scott Price. And you just heard a track from Propaganda, Bad Religion, off their new record, True North. Man, I haven't listened to Bad Religion in such a long time. And still doing what they do, even back in the day when I used to listen to them. Still the same Bad Religion, and there's something to be said for that. And that was the show for today. So let's get the theme going here. So today you heard interview with Sarah Petz about her fundraising project to get a funding to do a radio documentary in Uganda. So again, go to Indiegogo and look for Support My Master's Project in Uganda, and that's where you can find it there. I'll also be uploading the show, and you can find the links there on ckwnews.ca when I upload the show over the weekend. So I encourage you to help Sarah out with this. It's a worthy project. It's great journalism. That's exactly the kind of stuff that we need going on, especially talking about the developing world and in Africa. I think if you've been listening to the show, you realize coverage of this kind of stuff isn't that great sometimes. Although, I mean, again, she's a master's student, worked with mainstream media, quote-unquote mainstream media, whatever you want to call it. So it also shows, I mean, there's good people out there trying to do good work. So support that good work, please. Then you also heard Danielle DeLuca from Cultural Survival talking about the land grabs in Ethiopia, as well as an update on what's going on in the situation in Guatemala. Very, very interesting stuff happening here. So that is all what's happening now. Next week, I should have someone, the director from the Oakland Institute, Danielle mentioned it about in the in her interview. They did a whole series on land grabs and land investment in Africa. So I'm going to talk to him specifically about Mali, but also about this whole phenomenon of these land grabs and the get down and dirty into the details on this. So that'll be next week. So you want to tune in for that. Questions, comments, concerns, couple ways you can do that. Office phone here at CKW 204-786-9782. Email me warningshots.ckuw959@gmail.com. Excuse me, this cough. Email our news director, Michael Welsh, at ckuwnews@rocketmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at warningshots. I also encourage you to follow CKUW on Twitter at CKUW. And that is the show for the day. So it should be a beautiful weekend out there. I hope you all have a great weekend. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting listener-driven media here in the great city of Winnipeg. Do stay tuned. We got the community cupboard coming up. There's Mercy of Slumber, Now Sounds, and Peg City Groove, and then there's Destroy All Music. So, you know, the next couple hours, you can just leave it here on 95.9, and you just relax for your whole afternoon, and you can coast. And, and until I talk to you all next Friday, do take care of one another, be kind to one another, and I'll talk to you all next week. This is Scott Price signing off. Goodbye.
Grab yourself a pen and some paper. It's time for CKW's Community Cupboard. Announcements and resources from and in your community. If you have a public service announcement or community resource to share, contact us at 785